What does your wife think about it, Stefan?
She accepts it as a part of me, and you know, I'm very fortunate that I think she knows that this is something that isn't going away in a hurry. But still, you know, it's great. You know, she sees this stuff happening for herself. And I mean, it has been a while since she's shared anything with me. I know her life's pretty busy at the moment, but definitely, I know she digs it and gets it.
So you were talking with, I think it was you, were planning a big trip to the United States. Was that you at one point in time?
Yeah, definitely, and I still am, but it's always just basically for one reason or another hasn't been able to happen, and it's you know, the next place that I do go, there's potential that I will be able to come up sometime in 2012. You know, I'm definitely not stressing out about not rocking up, but you know, seeing that, you know, bunches of, you know, the sync community are getting together, it's definitely pretty enticing. But at the same time, you know, I've got a bit going on down here. So, basically at the moment, you know, we're in the process of getting a house, and, you know, money-wise, it's like, you know, funneling into that is pretty, pretty important. But, that doesn't mean that it's totally off the cards, you know. It's just getting over a bit of a hump of sorts, really, at the moment.
Buying the house is a kind of fun sync process, you know, as far as, like, you don't have any control of the market and what's available and what you can afford. And then you start looking at the numbers and stuff. It's like, you want to buy a house, so you don't care about the sync stuff. But then all of a sudden you start examining the synchromistic layer of buying a house. And you're like, yes, this number fits. We can buy this house, honey.
Well, again, going back to what we were talking about before, with my Jenny, is that's when she'll pull out the sync. She'll be like, oh, check it out. You know, there's, you know, Your signs are all over this place, mate, you know, like, and I know that this is, you know, I know she wants the place, you know what I mean? She's trying to get me on the sink side of things to get me to come around to, you know, one or the other place.
She's trying to sell you through sink.
That's hilarious.
Well, you know, it could work.
I was sure we were going to get the 42 house. It's like, oh, this is the house. This is the house.
This is the house.
No.
Doug, when we were in, oh, God, like that supermarket in upstate Washington or wherever we were.
On the way up the yeah.
Yeah, and Doug bought these cigars, these terrible, gross cigars, simply because of the fact of the, like, symbolism on the box. And we had this idea of, do you think, you know, for all these ideas of advertising, there's going to come a point where they're going to slap stuff on there just because someone's going to go, hey, this sinks, I have to buy it.
Syncretizing, that is the next phase of this, right? The person who's going to make $1 million.
What I was trying to get at the end of the 42-minute show was really just extending the sentiment in my sync book chapter, letting others know that it is okay to draw your own conclusions to whatever symbols that you are facing or coming across, and that you can own it. You can have it mean whatever you know you want it to mean. It doesn't have, nothing has to have a fixed meaning. You can rewrite it all. And really, I don't think I got this language into the book, but it really is like a rewriting or a recoding of you're able to recode you know, if you do, you know, if you do feel like in any way, shape or form that you're programmed, you know, you can deprogram quite easily. It doesn't take much at all.
That was the message I got from that movie too, was that you're the director. You know, you can decide.
Well, that's like it. You sent me that thing that had Jason, this is from Jason's email. Interstick 60 forms a philosophical counterpoint to the box. They form two halves of a whole, just as in that movie, James Marsden is given a box by God, which catapults him into the strange world of synchronicity. Christopher Lloyd introduces him to the concept of black hearts, the alchemical black sun, and the red spade. The red spade is the lance and the grail. I'm gonna see. He also, like in that new movie Hawk, where the Easter Bunny is going against his father and ends up finding James Marsden. They're all kind of looped in upon each other, and the Easter Bunny kind of star or is the same kind of Pooka aspect as what the character that Gary Oldman is playing. And Gary Oldman, of course, is Sirius Black, who's a dog or another Pooka at the same time.
Indeed, yeah. Marsden is the Easter Bunny.
Right. Right.
Mm.
It's really kind of wacky. The key, well, this is from Jason's, I'm going to go ahead, it's a short email, but the key was that he had to ask the question, which is that he wanted the answer. What was the answer? All of these signs and symbols point back to the missing girl, LL, or Lyndon, his anima, his muse. That's interesting because I come up on LL being the anima over and over and over again, but I haven't found any clear reason why that is other than Lilith. But yeah, the LL, that's the first thing I noticed when her name was LL. I was like, oh my God, that's like more confirmation for my whole anima being LL theory because she is.
Well, that, you know, and then just going back to what I was talking about, then why is LL not representing that? You've already got enough to go with. You know, you can run with that.
Yeah, Lois Lane. It's Lois Lane is Superman's LL, like his subconscious. It's the drive for him. She's always the one getting in trouble. She's always the one that he's got to save. She's the opposite of Lex Luthor, who's also an LL. They're like one and the same person. And then Jason goes on to say, this again is PKD's twin Sigzigi, I don't know what that word is, which mind does not wish to forget and of which our reality forms a constant reminder of her death. When he goes to find her, he is subject to the curse of law or karmic debt in the town of Morlaw and is imprisoned. But this is where he finds her and thus recovers his muse, the star and the moon of the tarot. There was a killer on the loose, which was, after all, himself. He goes on to say, just as in Inception, he has to choose between following his father, a man of the law, or going his own way with his muse into visualization. Line in the movie says, well, thank you, Carl Jung. Just as in Ferris Bueller, he takes the red BMW out to destroy it in the end. The father's ego chariot is killed. The killer was on the run for killing his father. It goes without saying that all of this occurs within his mind, the interior space of the psyche. The true final frontier, but such as a journey was repercussions in the real, or such a journey has repercussions in the real world. I don't know. I can't understand if the movie was supposed to be slapstick when it has so many like underlining themes that are esoteric in it. Alan, you with me still?
Yeah, I'm here. I mean, this is what I've been coming back to. I mean, all these movies, and it's like as Stefan was saying, you know, the. All these interpretations are valid, and I particularly like Jason's interpretation of this movie. But, you know, you said the idea of how can it be slapstick if it has all these underlying esoteric meanings? But, you know, every movie, every piece of media, whether it's a song, whether it's a movie, whether it's a comic book, whatever it is, if it's the contents of your fridge, we're finding the same esoteric underpinnings in all of it. So if you want to look for it there, you'll find it. I'm viewing this as what these esoteric schools were tapping into was a basic, I don't know, the, you know, a sort of elemental structure of the of the universe that through either a fractal or holographic nature is essentially encoded into everything. But someone doesn't need to find the esoteric understanding in it. They can find the humor in it, and you'll find the humor in everything. So just as this was outright slapstick with esoteric underpinnings, we can find an esoteric story with underpinnings of comedy. I mean, you know, for me, with watching this movie, I have to be honest with you, there was a moment for me. You know, I spoke the first time that I've ever spoken to this guy a few weeks ago. I briefly spoke with Celtic Rebel.
Okay.
How did that go?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've only tried to listen to his stuff a few times, and I find myself really, you know, just...
Frustrated?
Yeah, frustrated, because it seems a fixation. And to me, though, it was really funny, and I could break it down for you. I could, after watching this movie, I could write a Celtic Rebel post about this movie.
You could very easily write a Celtic Rebel.
Easy.
Well, holy because of shit. the whole aspect of the girl trying to get in the car and then trying to get into the pants of Gary Oldman when he has no junk.
Right.
The bow tie, of course, is symbolic of ties are symbolic of the penis. Whether you're wearing a tie that goes down or a bow tie, it has to do with dominance as far as sexuality and everything. It's not that I disagree with what Celtic Rebel is. Just Celtic Rebel is an obvious fixation. They get mad at us because we don't mention it. But as soon as we mentioned it just a little bit, we got all this hate mail saying you're just stealing Celtic Rebel stuff. So we just said, well, fuck it. There's plenty of other things to fixate on. They think that we're trying to deny everything, and we're just not. We're just staying away from frustration. I mean, we just don't want aggressiveness.
Right. Exactly. I mean, here's my thing, though, is, you know, all right, you said it perfectly. I'm sorry, I'm on no sleep for 2 days. So, but ultimately, for me, watching this movie was at least that I felt like, okay, I get you, man, for going towards Celtic Rebel. It was like, okay, I get you, man. But I still think, yes, if someone wants to purely fixate on anal sex and gay sex, that to me is an issue, is you should be open to viewing other interpretations. Just as for Jason, that everything breaks down to this sort of, you know, Gnostic mythos, I think he should be open to other interpretations, and so on and so on and so on. And ultimately, that's why I like Stefan's piece in the book, and why, you know, someone said, hey, this made a great introductory piece early on in the Sync book. Well, yeah, that's why I put it there, because I think it shows that ultimately you can find all these interpretations and they're all equally valid. So for me, it's the idea of, without going crazy, you know, this is this sort of schizophrenia aspect, but to say I can actually understand every one of these interpretations. I can understand Jason's esoteric understanding. I can understand, you know, Celtic Rebel's understanding. I can understand all these different things and see how they're all valid, and it's up to us to interpret it. And ultimately, for me, I think you have to choose not only the fluidity of going back and forth amongst all these things, but also find one that doesn't frustrate you. If you're finding in all every movie something that makes you so angry, and then that's probably not a healthy thing to do.
No, it's not. If people need to pay more attention to their emotions and how things make them feel, I mean, I think that's people like Jake Kotz's main message. See, this is the thing, though, is the people who are stuck in that, the frustrated mode, are the ones who lash out the most. If you notice, there's very few times that people that are in the sinkhole are ever talking shit, and we're not talking shit now by any means, but it seems that the ones who are frustrated are the ones who are the one, or they're the ones who vocalize their non-support for others, individuals, the most often. And there's something to be said about that. I mean, the people like who are in the sinkhole are mostly individuals who have families. I mean, there's no question about our sexual orientation, especially through our own minds at all. And, you know, it's hard to write. I mean, I just wrote a post called USA A-OK that's about the gay node and everything. So it's not like I'm not doing it, and it's not like I'm hiding from it at any cost. Although it didn't take long for me to get, not necessarily an aggressive comment, but I got one that was anti the post already, which is probably one of the first, you know, aggravated comments that I've ever gotten on my blog. The fact of the matter is, it's hard to write about, you know, sexual content when you have a kid sitting in your lap asking daddy what he's doing.
Totally.
And yeah, and if you're going to devote your life to writing about sexual content, even if it's, you know, disparaging, saying, hey, look how terrible this is, I mean, aren't you just, I don't know, in a way, you're regurgitating the crap, right? You're saying, hey, look at this. Hey, look at this.
Right.
What if you think it's that bad? Why the hell, you know?
You're not reinterpreting the black magic. It's regurgitating the black magic.
After listening to you on that most recent show, Alan, I'm wondering if they're not taking the symbol too literal, that perhaps, I mean, what they're seeing is very, very valid, but what they're really seeing is a metaphor for other things that are going on. Sorry, my coffee's ready.
Well, no, I understand what you're saying. They're not even attempting. It's the Sherlock Holmes, what he used to say is making the evidence fit the theory, or making the theory fit the evidence. They already have their theory. Everything that they're going to see past that point will match what their theory is. They're going to fit because they already know who the killer is. They already know who the enemy is. And so everything they see is going to lead them back to that idea.
And okay, now can I, I'm sorry, I don't want to dominate this, but can I make the devil's argument here is, couldn't a lot of us be accused of doing the same thing? If, you know, the sinkhole wants to relate things to Jupiter.
I think that's a fallacy, too. We're not freaking Jupiter worshippers. It just so happens that Jupiter is all over everything.
But this comes down to I-60. You know, what you see, the story that you... This is why it's so funny. It seems like the story that you gravitate toward is going to be your story. Plastic.
Was going back to how sync can show you that you are personally connected, that you are tapped into this, and that's how I interpret it as a tool. And if and all of the benefits that you could get from that kind of realization within you know, your existence, and I feel that that if you're just using I just feel like that if it's a remote, if it's a control device if sync is a control device, that in those cases only one button is being pressed, and it's being pressed all the time. It's not actually the actual power, the real power of
what Sync has to offer isn't in unfolding nefarious plots to program our boys into being gay.
Right. The funny thing for me, the idea of a gay conspiracy doesn't really fly with me, and I'm not worried about it. I'm not afraid of gay people, so it's not really an issue for me. But even when I was in my most hardcore conspiracy phase of, and to this day, I mean, you can very clearly see things like war propaganda being put out into action movies and tons of movies. That for me, I still see that very vividly. But even when I was in my most hardcore conspiracy phase, what I started to see is that there are layers where it's like, well, okay, on this level, I can see, something, a creepy pedophile angle, or I can see a war propaganda angle. And I start watching these movies, and I'm going, wow, this is so terrible. And then another 10 minutes into the movie, I go, but wait a second. There's that surface layer, but now I'm just noticing this deeper layer, which is, to me, seems unintentional and is touching on all this other stuff. And then, hey, here's a third layer, which is touching on a whole other mythology. And then, hey, here's a fourth layer that's touching on all this other stuff. So if you find that it's sort of, you can always go deeper, you can always, there's always room for that individuation or the reinterpretation, as Stefan, as your piece really makes clear, that you can always make it personal.
The movie Brazil kind of speaks to that a little bit, where the character goes through those various layers. The surface story is really conspiratorial, but it kind of has to break through to this more, maybe not, maybe I need to see, watch that one better. But that's one of the movies that I wrote down as I was watching this I-60. And then there's also a Herman Hesse's story about a magic theater too, where basically you can compose any story in the magic theater, and then at the end the guy who brought the character into the magic theater was like, why did you make such a mess in here? There's war, and this poor girl that you're in love with got raped and murdered. Why did you do this? Kind of speaking to the protagonist. Oh, and this is great because we've been talking about Inception and where Leonardo DiCaprio draws the sync symbol. He's drawing the two arrows and putting you in between as both the creator and the experiencer of the dream. You're simultaneously doing both.
Yeah. Totally. It's almost like we're all like different nodes in a system of sorts, and we all are receiving the input from the same source, but how we modulate those signals and what comes out the other end, what gets produced, is totally different. It's unique to every and weird and everybody has their own. Nobody. It's impossible for anybody to within this realm to actually see it exactly how you see it, interpret it exactly how you interpret it at the same time.
And yet it's amazing that we can all find what synchronicity is. Synchronicity is the common ground where we're saying, yeah, okay, we're all interpreting it differently, but we're all going, hey, look at this.
But the interesting point about that is that So if part of this is a reflection of our inner darkness, that we're externalizing the things that we actually have to deal with, it's not even the people's fault, that have, a different kind of darkness than we do. So, let's say you gravitate toward bad comedies or, depending on the kind of story that you need to heal you, how responsible do we make people for their pasts, or the family they were born into, or the times they were born into, or you know, the idea of accountability, this is one of those really interesting things that keeps coming up for me. It's like, so let's say we do want a new world. How do you get there? You know, how do you hold people accountable for their actions? And how much do you? Because where do their actions spring from? What's the source of all this darkness in the world? And how would we change that?
I'm not sure of the exact answer to that. Though I think that if we are going to see a new phase, it would be one where we enable each other to take responsibility for our own actions, and that would be the be all and end all. That how you judge yourself, if you how you deal with the choices that you make, the decisions you make, the actions you take. I don't feel that that I have any right to tell you whether you're doing the right thing or the wrong thing. I don't think that you've got the right to tell me. So I think ultimately I think that needs to be a lot of other things in place in order for that to actually happen, but ultimately I do feel that's what people need.
You talk in terms of programming a lot, which is because that's your business, but I'm a father, and so I'm doing programming and coding also, but then I also have this inherent code that was, I didn't have any control over the code that my parents were putting on me.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's like an evaluation of their code, but the interesting thing is that if you're not conscious, you just slip into the code that you were born into. As far as, oh, you're a father too, and you know this, right?
Yes. Yeah. But like, it's one of the scariest things that you can experience is how your child models your behavior. It's and how early it starts. It's pretty confronting stuff. And I think it's definitely one of the benefits of what has been for me of being a parent is that it's actually helped me look at I say it jokingly at work that when I'm in meetings and people are getting all puffing up their chests and egos are flying all around the room, is that I look at everybody as if they're like a child, really they are at the end of the day, they're just like my boy. They're modeling their dad, they're modeling their uncle, and then if you go back to the dad and the uncle, they were doing modeling themselves. So it's a very crazy relay that's going on, but I definitely see heaps of signs, not even sync related, of where there is a real break. I feel that there's a real break taking place where people are snapping out of just going along with what they're being told or what other people think or whatever. I definitely think that there's a massive bloom taking place where and sync is just one hallmark of or one sort of clue that's taking place, and that I think it's an awesome thing. But it seems like that there is a bit of a purge taking place as well. At this point in time, it just feels like a lot of that darkness does seem to be getting amplified a little bit at the moment.
In Interstate 60, that's part of the plot, right? Where he has to not only learn to purge his father's law, right? His father is the lawyer, as Jason made clear, right? The father was the law. Then he has to go to, I don't remember, what was the town where the police
Morlaw.
No, well, not Morlaw. Before Morlaw, the town with all the ecstasy or Euphoria, and it was actually the government was pushing the drugs, and they said
Banyan or Banner. I was trying to unpack the name of the town a little bit, but I couldn't get.
But so, right, so in that town,
Kurt Russell walked in, and then you just like, I can't even concentrate on anything in this movie.
And he was wearing a bad Snake Plissken type ponytail.
Well, he's just like, you know, John Hurt played Winston Smith in 1984, and then he goes to play the head of the fascist government in V for Vendetta. Well, you know, it's sort of like Kurt Russell plays Snake Plissken, who is at the mercy or fighting against the evil government and controlling elite. And then in this movie, he is the very same, what do we want to call that, military industrial complex that's pushing the very drugs to make you slaves to the state and all this sort of stuff. That was his role.
And that's the cycle that I wonder about. So that, is it an inevitability that the son becomes the father? And does the son do that by using the methodology or the programming of the father? So, you know, Saturn was this kind of tyrannical force, and the only way to remove power from Saturn, you know, his son Jupiter ended up cutting his balls off, but then ended up becoming a similar type of authority figure.
Even going as far as devouring his children. He repeats the exact same myth, right? Saturn is famous for eating his children, then Zeus does the same thing, and it's Athena that has to burst out of his head, right?
Which is justice.
Right, so it's this same idea. To me, what that represents would be the danger of once you're rebelling against the law, that you are, you know, the rebel can become the tyrant. So just as John Hurt can become it, as just as Kurt Russell can become it. And in Interstate 60, so he has to rebel against both his father's law, he has to rebel against Kurt Russell's law, and then he has to rebel against the town of Moore law. But always there's the risk that he could become the very same tyrant. And I think that was evidenced with the red car when it turns out he was the killer, or potentially in one alternate reality, he was the killer. And that was the idea that he could become the very thing he was fighting against.
Well, in the Harry Potter books, it's interesting because rules are very, very important. And the only way Harry succeeds is by breaking the rules in every single book. Which is, I don't know.
That's with the whole Jupiter Saturn story. That's what I take away from it, is that the laws do need to be broken, no doubt about it.
Can I ask you, Stefan? If I'm not mistaken, you are. If you don't want to speak of it, that's fine, but you are experienced in psychedelics and stuff like that?
Yes.
Is that an okay topic to touch on or no?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, so it doesn't have to be through psychedelics, but I think it's a really nice, relatable topic in that the idea of ego death, of course, doesn't have to come through psychedelics, but it's very commonly associated. And there's the idea that after you've essentially killed your ego, just as Athena is bursting through her father's head and she's killing the father, she's killing the ego, there's always the danger that, or, I don't know if we're going to call it danger, but eventually it has to come back into play, right?
Yes.
We go so far into the id, and that at some point we need to essentially get shit done, and we need that little bit of that tyrant to come back to manage our lives. And it's always this very delicate balance of how do you have to sort of repeatedly kill it. And I think that's this sort of cycle of Saturn or Kronos, is this idea that, you know, you are in this constant cycle of having to reap and sow, just as Osiris or Saturn, any of these guys where they have to become the baby again. It's like you have to Once the ego gets too strong, you have to kill it and start all over, but eventually it'll creep back.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's I think that that's that's probably one of a fairly common stage that people who, you know, in inverted commas, enlightened ones, it's one of the first stages, you know, road speed bumps that they'll hit, is that you know, you have some kind of awakening or an insight. You achieve it, however, whether it be through psychedelics or meditation, or maybe it's just a spontaneous thing that happens in your life. And for, you know, the next couple of weeks, couple of months, however long it is, yeah, you know, everything is golden. Heaven, it's heaven on earth. But it definitely has the potential to creep back, and I think that is the key. And I don't think that you are stuck with relying on the tyrant when you are drawn back. And like you said, you do have to exist within this world in some way, shape, or form. You have to deal with other people. Other people have to deal with you. People get stressed. People get, you know, things get hairy, and all of a sudden you can find that, hold on a second, I just called someone an asshole, you know, I thought I was enlightened. What the hell's going on here? What happened? You know, but hey that could be the point where you're just like, well, that enlightenment shit, that's for the birds. You know, that's for the hippies, and you just continue along with the tyrant. But again, it's the choice, you know, like making the choice to break that rule again and again and again and again and again, because it's going to keep on coming up. But it'll be like a swinging pendulum where you are shortening the stem. I believe that if you do keep on coming back to it, and you do hit that little reset button, however you manage to hit it, and you are focused on a peaceful outlook, or just being without judging, and without balancing, or without ego, that I'm sure that the gaps in between the tyrant resurfacing will be extended, and the pendulum will swing less, and you will go less from tyrant to not tyrant, and hopefully you'll find, you know, that you'll get closer to a center of sorts and remain there for longer periods of time.
We were talking with Justin, it was interesting because we were considering this documentary series called All Watched Over by Machines of Loving Grace.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen it, I think you would really appreciate it. But the interesting thing as human creatures is that we want stability, even though the natural state more is flux and change. And so we try and create a situation where we can feel safe in a chaotic world, but we end up becoming that tyrant. To do that, you know, to create the square that protects us from the circle.
Yes.
And so that just fascinates me that it's our own need. It's our own need for this false sense of, I don't even know how to say
well,
that.
It is a false sense of security, because You know, screw ego death. What about, you know, your death? You know, you are gonna die. You know, like what of that security is gonna protect you from that? You know what I mean? So there's nothing.
Our whole civilization too. Everything is like focused on this inevitable death. And so the priest class in the United States is the medical doctors, because everything is about extending your life as long as possible, because that's what we value, and those are the people that are rewarded, you know, monetarily for their work, you know, extending life as long as humanly possible.
The Holy Grail.
Well,
but then lose life in the process because we don't actually value the time we have. We're so fearful of, you know, what could happen, or, you know, the other side, that, you know, we end up serving, you know, putting all our time into creating a scenario where
that's
we can live as long as possible without ever living, I guess.
Yeah, and what's the point? What's the point, you know, like, where is our proof that, you know, that this inevitable death is the be-all and end-all and is just the end? Where is the proof that, you know, you're going to get fire and brimstone? Where is the proof either way? And you know, what? That's the, you know, the question that I, you know, that I just keep coming back to with all of this. You know, if I have to ask any question about anything, you know, is it true? Like, is it true? Like, is it really true? Like, why am I doing this ego-based activity right now? You know, like.
Can I bring this back to your sync book piece? In your sync book piece, you mentioned the idea of this galactic center. And earlier, just a few minutes ago, you mentioned the idea of this pendulum swing that gets closer and closer to this striking a balance, which to me would echo very nicely with this idea of alignment. And even the idea of the death, where you say, how do we know that it's permanent? So I guess my question to you is there a permanence? Is there a permanent balance? Is there a permanent alignment that we can strive for, the swelling of the pendulum? And we can see perhaps the quote-unquote negative is the permanent death, the permanent living death, and the quote-unquote good would be that permanent living in this, you know, euphoric state of perfect alignment. Are either of those possible, which I think sort of builds on Doug's point of, is flux more natural, that there's, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that, any of the, you know, the Buddhas would have been, you know, the ones that would have been realizing those states, the ones that were, that managed to actually attain those while here, it definitely is attainable. However, I think that the answer to actually achieve the way to achieving that is deceptively simple. I think that it's that there's more there's less to it than it seems, and that as opposed to it being like, you know, doing my spiritual exercise for the day and reading a whole heap of books on whatever new age topics, you know, that I think that are interesting and keeping me there or whatever, you know, I think it's the opposite. I think that, you know, you accept the flux, that everything is in these beautiful, you know, blooming, then rotting, then blooming again, you know, and that you get there by doing nothing whatsoever. and accepting the whole damn thing for what it is, and for whatever it is.
Right. And then to that, metaphorically speaking, I like what Star Wars does with the tyrant, where Luke, he doesn't want to rule a galaxy with his father. He doesn't want to take on that egoic role. What he wants is, you know, the new hope, the idea of something beyond what they've had, the Death Star. And so he forgives his father, you know, help me remove this mask, you know. So as far as, like, it's interesting, you know, thinking about Jason's alchemical cosmology, Alan. It seems like in all the movies we can find that monomyth, but very few actually take it past a certain point. You know, I think it's the last three cards of the tarot with the, you know, judgment, the world, and the sun, where you actually get into beyond
the next phase.
Beyond the cycle of sadness that we deal with here, where we see it go around and around, where the King Kill, beyond this, beyond taking the next leap, I guess.
Well, you mentioned Star Wars. I mean, it's nice for us to imagine that, okay, Darth Vader is redeemed and balance is brought to the Force and all that sort of stuff. But, George Lucas had originally planned for 9 movies, right? And it was the idea that, I believe it was that Luke continues with his temptation and his struggles, and that I think the original plan was that Leia sort of had to rise up against Luke. And it's the idea that, obviously, let's not even take... I mean, so that's the personal struggle of trying not to become the tyrant, but there's also the idea that you just took out the Emperor of a vast intergalactic empire. There's still going to be repercussions and battles and struggles. It's not like you just remove the linchpin and suddenly it's fucking paradise. No,
so you
have
life then, and they all lived happily ever after, ending.
But bullshit. Bullshit. You have to deal with, what about all the Jabba the Hutts, all the petty tyrants on their small planets that are still going to be assholes, that are still going to oppress people? You didn't just make the world a paradise. You just got rid of one bad guy, but there's still suffering.
He's the bad guy.
Yes, he's the bad guy, but he's only one of many bad guys. Like, here's what I don't understand. Like, even from a conspiratorial point of view, people talk about they want to take down, the Bilderberg Group or the Rockefellers or whomever. But ultimately, what about the guy who gets drunk and beats his wife on a Thursday afternoon? You don't even know his name. He doesn't even make the news. What about that guy?
Why is he getting drunk and beating his wife?
But because of the Emperor? No, because
yes, because of the Emperor, because of this the fall, the original sin. It's like,
but originally
it's
we
a
all
stone.
Have, yeah.
You know, we're seeing the ripples of this horrible thing that happened.
That is not why.
Why does he get drunk and beat his wife?
Because he owns his wife's body.
Property. There you go. We live in a the idea that we actually own something, and maybe that goes back to the sense of stability again, that I own this piece of property, this is mine.
And isn't that what the Emperor is doing? The Emperor is looking to rule the world. And what is the world? The world is the female Gaian mother, right? So the Emperor wants to rule the world, so the petty Emperor wants to rule his wife. It's the same thing, and ultimately what I think it shows is the heart of darkness is within all of us. We are all capable of terrible deeds, and that's why it has to start with yourself. Any of these processes, you can't go and fight the external Emperor, just as you can't find the external God. You have to fight your internal Emperor. You have to find your internal God.
Totally. Indeed. You just, what about the drunk guy that's beating his wife? You know what I mean? Like, maybe you can change that situation in as much as you can change the situation of Darth Vader and Luke. If you really are wanting to change anything, the only place you're going to be able to make that is internally. And make an individual change. Sometimes, we're lucky, and these individuals come out, and ripples hit us all, and it assists us to change. But I think, for the most part, now it's it's up to you.
So now to the flip side of that, I think the common argument would be, well, if the Emperor is essentially the abusive husband, and we, the citizens, are the abused wife, at what point is it not an inter... that's where we kind of go through these cycles of saying, someone's going to argue, well, yeah, it's I can change my internal, but there's still a guy beating the shit out of me. There's still, whether that be a police state or a drunken husband, there's still someone external. How do we address that?
This way, partially. And so if there's any way to change the past, you have to behave differently in the future. So let's say you did want to live in a less fearful world. Would you be afraid? I mean, the only way I can get there is to say, all right, I'm not going to be afraid of the world. I'm not going to participate in a world where, I mean, so if this person wants to steal from me, they're going to steal from me. I'm not going to act guarded. And by not acting guarded, does that produce the attitude that people aren't interested in stealing from you?
That doesn't work. Let me tell you something.
it kind of does, though.
No, wait,
so
Doug.
Stop locking my car in Garden City. In the garden.
Yeah.
No one's stealing my stuff.
But, okay, here's the deal. I'm just going to give you an example. It was funny. A few years back, it was shortly after the first time I had done acid. So that was my first ego death experience. And again, I don't mean to make this sound like it's all about psychedelics, but that for me was the initiation of, wow. So that was a wow moment for me, of course. And I lived for a while in this very sort of zen state of everything was just beautiful. And I had this roommate at some point who started stealing money from me. And my reaction was, well, if he needs it, you know, that's okay. I didn't get upset about it. I didn't anything. I said, this is, you know, it's just stuff. It's just stuff. And then, of course, my life deteriorated and deteriorated and deteriorated until ultimately I was on the verge of homelessness and I had to go to the hospital because I wasn't eating and I ended up with malnutrition. And then, suddenly one day, I became the tyrant. I chased this motherfucker down through the streets with this bloodlust of, you know what, screw the Zen shit. You just stole from me. You've stolen from me for months, and now I'm fucked. You know, it turned so easy. It turned so easy. And I'm not saying I responded appropriately in either of those scenarios. I shouldn't have flipped on him, but I also shouldn't have let it get to that point. And I think this is why I always come back to this idea of striking a balance. We really have to, you know, it's great to say everything's wonderful. And I believe that's true. I think everything, I mean, what Sync shows me is everything is connected in this beautiful, beautiful tapestry. But within that tapestry, there's some guy who's going to steal shit from you. And yes, it's just stuff, but, you know, I think you have to strike the balance.
That's it. We currently live in a world where material is more important than people. Unless we're talking about our individual, the relationships, our direct relationships, for the most part, we value material more than we value people. And so, how do you create a world where we care more about people than we do material? Can we do that?
Well, apparently we can. Apparently, there is enough food and there is enough material. You know? I mean, that's one of the arguments, you know, against, you know, these famines that you see taking place around the world, is that, that it doesn't need to be this way because we actually do have enough to provide. And you know, and if people were provided for, and I don't claim to know what the system is and how it would actually work, but if people didn't need to steal small amounts of money just to get food, then you'd be erasing a whole heap of crap from a lot of people's lives, and most of all the guy who's actually doing the stealing. Like, man, that's, you know, not a cool existence.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, at this point, I mean, I think for me, what I, like I said, to me it seems paradoxical, but it's sort of like, a few years ago I realized, you know what, I do love Big Brother. You know, I am Winston Smith, I do love Big Brother, but in the sense that I have sympathy for him. I have sympathy that he has to live his life as such a huge douchebag. At the same time, I do not approve of his actions, and I'm not going to let Big Brother control me, but I will love him. I will love him unconditionally. The idea of turn the other cheek to me is love thy neighbor, but, you know, don't let him so badly abuse you. Does this, I mean, do you know what I'm saying?
Exactly. I mean, if a bird, you know, landed on your head and just started pecking and pecking and pecking at your skull, I think eventually you would wave your arm and you'd shoo it off.
Right.
And definitely, you know, and you just, you know, and you'd be like, yeah, you know, those birds, they do that. They peck skulls, you know. We've actually got birds here that swoop people and they actually have killed people before, like hitting them in the head, you know. It happens. It's nature, you know. But, and there's not much you're going to be able to do about that, but you can actually avoid it. There's ways of getting around it, you know. You do not have to have your head pecked open. There's a choice. You do have a choice to a certain extent, and then, you know, they are positions that you know, these dodgy situations can, you know, for some parts be situations that you're putting yourself into.
Correct. And I think ultimately it means you don't have to go and try and make all those birds extinct. You don't have to set up traps and try and take on the birds. You can still be an animal lover. You're just going to stop that one particular bird from pecking your head.
Exactly. I think the challenge is there, you know, is that, you know, are you being pecked to the point where you can't even see up from down? You know what I mean? Are you like, you know, are you just totally, you know, getting overwhelmed by all of these, you know, all of these negative things that are going on, and you know what, it's not surprising that you lash out, you know what I mean? I can fully understand that, you know, to get to a point where you're just like, I've had enough, you know, it's rage time, you know. But no, I'm not condoning it in any way, shape or form. It's just, you know, it is an equally valid response.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I said I wasn't trying to advocate for.
No, I didn't think you were at all. Yeah. And I'm saying, yeah, totally. Like, you know, I don't advocate it either, but I can fully see where you're coming from. You know, like, wow.
I think, don't we
all want to do that? Don't we all want to, you know, knock out the bad guys and take them out and like make it a better place? You know, I mean, I think that if it was achievable, then. You know, using those methods and these tactics, then somebody would have done that shit by now.
Right, and it's not possible. And that was what I was saying before. There's still the heart of darkness is in all of us, and to me, that's why I say you strike, you try.
So you have to heal your heart of darkness.
Uh huh. Yes.
And by healing that, do you heal the world?
Yes, you do. You do. In fact, you do. I mean, you know, you are the world. You are.
And Christ consciousness, the idea that. So instead of acting from a place of revenge, so one of the discussions we were having was, so I didn't understand Will's experiment at first, this, you know, synchronizing the movie, and I was saying, well, you know, it's almost Christmas time, and, you know, let's share holiday movies, but I love The Godfather at Christmas, and I never really thought about it until now, because The Godfather is this idea of the world that we have, where it's dog-eat-dog and revenge, where, you know, the father tries to spare his son from becoming him. You know, he doesn't want him to do that. He tries to create this sheltered existence for him so that he could not be part of reality. But then to save his father's honor, Michael initiates himself into the family business and becomes his father.
Yeah.
Michael is Jesus, right? He's the Godfather. Is God the Father, and Michael is the.
Marlon Brando is the Godfather. You know, he for me, he is this Jupiter figure, because he plays Superman's father also in the Superman series.
Right. The same thing. He's the soul, the father of the solar, you know, sun.
And then later in the bad movie, The Godfather Part 3, it's actually the sins of the father end up killing his own children. His daughter suffers for Michael Corleone's sins.
Yeah.
which is particularly interesting to me because, you know, my firstborn is a daughter, and so it's like, okay, back to the heart of darkness again. You know, if we're all the demiurge, the directors of our life, and we need to actually be healed, and we heal ourselves by, you know, our childlike essence, our heart, you know, instead of sacrificing our son, how do we get to that place of healing? You know, the redemption. I don't know.
Yeah. Again, I just, you know, breaking the rules to me just keeps on jumping out at me. You know, what whatever you're expected to do, you know, don't do it. You know, don't, you know, reacting and just following the script,
mm-hmm.
going through the motions. I mean, I can see that, you know, it can seem, you know, as if these that there's this loop happening with this narrative, that it could appear as if the same story, it's alluding to the same story being played out, but I think looking around just at people now, that, you know, and just that may not be evolution in a Darwinian sense, but things are definitely progressing, and I do believe that, you know, even though that it does look like there's a lot of bad stuff going on, that I think for the most part that it actually, it's, you know, that it is better than it has been, you know, in a long time, you know, on this planet, for people, for individuals, that, you know, I'm not saying that everybody has it and there isn't work to be done, but I do feel that there's a progression taking place, no doubt about it. So the rules being rules seem to be, you know, breaking rules seems to be essential to that progression.
Isn't that how we create something new, right? If the rules are the old law, you have to sort of break it and try something new to create complexity in the universe.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, we wouldn't be having this conversation in the first place if it wasn't for us breaking a rule that we previously had. That, you know, there's no doubt that. That 15 years ago, maybe, you know, we wouldn't have been able to do this. And I'm not talking about technology. I'm talking about us understanding each other and actually finding some common ground.
Sure, and breaking the rules that our parents gave us, which was don't talk to strangers.
And also, you know, politics, religion or sex or whatever those subjects are that you're not allowed to talk about with, you know, if you want to keep it civil and keep it nice.
Well, just, I take that, you know, like, a lot of people, their private lives are private for a reason, you know? And so even within the sync community, I made assumptions that some of these people didn't really have lives of struggle, or, because I end up just putting it all out there and not, like, completely open, because I don't even know what I'm trying to say here. It's just that, like, exactly what you guys are saying, that if we're open to one another, we can actually grow. You know, if you're keeping secrets, then it's almost the secret that will one day destroy you.
Yeah, and, you know, if you are going to look at the situation as being there being an inherent connectedness of all things, then, you know, again, that's another lie, that these secrets don't even exist. There's no such thing.
It's a stagnation, too, where there's a blockage in the flow by trying to hold on to your own darkness and not let other people know that you're not perfect, or you're sinning, or whatever it is that you think that you've done wrong, or that you're embarrassed about, or that people would judge you about.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the only way that you are going to be able to get past any of that would be to confront it and to look at that, and that definitely that's seems to be where we're going with this, is that that darkness needs to be focused on, you know, from an individual perspective.
Now, do we find ourselves back? I'm sorry. Do we find ourselves back at the where we started this sort of later segment, the idea of the guys become fixated on the darkness? You know, we talked about the Celtic Rebel and things like that. The guys become fixated on the darkness. How do we address our own darkness without being consumed by it?
Well, I think that you touched on it earlier on, that in that, you know, it's the love element, you know. You know, you gotta love all of it, like every single bit of it, and accept it, and you know, it's only, you know, then that, you know, that you will be able to work with it and make any changes. You know, definitely not addressing it directly. You know, jumping on a blog in the comments section of a blog and firing off expletives. You know, like trolling or whatever. That isn't gonna cut it.
Right. The troll lives under
someone else.
So the troll lives under the bridge, and we're trying to cross the bridge, right?
That's it. It's the stagnation. It's like, yeah, it's like at some point, you know, it's like he decided to just stay there and just hang out, like, with the flotsam and jetsam under it, instead of crossing over and making the full leap. And, you know, and that is, you know, rebelling. That's being a rebel, is, you know, breaking your own rules.
In the world of fear and stagnation, the currency is material. And then in this new world that we're talking about, the currency is love. I love you, man.
I love you too. I think that is there a currency? You know, what is it? Is it true that there is a currency in this new world? You know, is it not labeled as we label it? Is the flow of energy and or energies plural seen as just that and accepted as that, as the flow, and that's it? It's not it doesn't matter whether it's it's flowing weakly or flowing strongly. It's just flowing, like things are right now.
And the word currency comes from current, you know it's flow. Well, our whole economy is the idea of flow, you know, the flow of services and goods and materials from city to city or individual to individual. It's just, you know, it's a biological process as well as the spiritual process.
Sure. Oh, you kept saying, you know, flow and flotsam and jetsam and, you know, all these sort of nautical references. And when you said currency, it immediately sounded like current sea. You said, we're trying to find the new world. Is there a current sea? S-E-A. You know, are we in our current sea and we're trying to find the new world?
Well, guys, we've been talking for about 50 minutes, and I know neither one of you have been to sleep yet tonight, today, whatever.
I'm sleeping in the future.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think. I've definitely gone past time now. Definitely gone. There is no time.